got a lot tied up inside. Got Jesus on your mind. And a boy that just won't fight. Baby, it's a grind. And this your bitter light. Nothing just won't do. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring. That bird won't sing.
Hey everybody, this is Diane and Todd, and you are here for yet another episode. We keep going of This Conversation Rocks.
Yay!
How's it going, Todd?
It's going. What episode is this?
I don't know. You're supposed to be counting the episodes. I still don't have posting privileges.
Well, you can post.
It's because I'm on a Mac.
Yeah, well, there is that problem. Yeah, episode 2016 something or other.
That was a good guess.
I know. Working on it. Got to pull up the website, honestly. And of course, you know, I'm not going to see it right away because I've been posting like crazy on our website.
I know, but you posted some good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
While you're pulling that up, I did see a name in the commentary on our Facebook page that I didn't recognize, which was kind of cool. So I just want to give that person a shout out.
And really? People are looking at our Facebook page?
Yeah, can you believe it?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so thank you everybody for looking at the Facebook page. I have to get to the right Facebook page.
Right, that's always the problem. This is going to be episode 2016-14.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Because 13, you just finished editing, and I'll get that posted today.
Very good.
So today being Sunday the 22nd.
It's okay, I get to listen to it on the way to work in the morning. Yes, I still do go back and listen to the episodes. It's probably some form of megalomania or something. I should probably call Donald Trump and get that diagnosed.
Well, yeah.
Okay, gosh, where is that?
I'm looking.
Holy cow, you have been posting a lot. Okay, the name that I don't recognize that hopefully you do, Joanne Clark.
No idea.
Joanne Clark, this is for you. Thank you so much for listening. We're thrilled that neither of us recognize the name, because that means you came to us through a friend or through our posts. So, welcome aboard.
That is so cool.
Yeah. I'm all but begging people to share our podcast at this point. Well, so let's kick into an update of the news of the week, since that seems to be kind of our MO lately.
The news of the week. Well, let's see. Do you want to talk about LGBT problems? Do you want to talk about the Fed? Let's see. What else did I post up on the website? Do you want to talk about abortion?
I will tell you, we can't talk about abortion because that is in Fuck That Guy. So okay. we will talk about it, but we'll talk about it later.
Okay, great.
So, of course, there's also election stuff to talk about, too. So, start us out. Tell me where you want to start first.
I've all but given up on the election stuff. I don't care.
Well, I do. So, it sounds like maybe we need to start there first, and then you can haul me away from the election kicking and screaming.
Okay.
So I just wanted to point out, because I listened to it and it was torture, that Donald Trump spoke to the NRA this week and they did give him their endorsement. And I think probably the biggest liar, liar, pants on fire moment from his speech was his claim that Hillary Clinton wants to overturn the Second Amendment. Right?
I don't think he knows what those words really mean, actually.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Because, yeah... I don't recall anybody saying they wanted to ever overturn the Second Amendment.
I don't either. But...
Maybe we should and start again, but...
Right. But it was definitely red meat for the base. There was lots of cheering. Sure. So, yeah, it was a pretty appalling moment in American history.
Well, but this is the thing, is that if Donald's saying it, it's probably not true. I mean, here's the thing, is that there's a lot of Americans who just, you know, they know that, and whatever.
The other problem is, though, the number of people who think it's true. The number of people who take him at his word.
I hate to say it, it's all just going to come back down to the red state, blue state count in fucking Ohio, you know?
So John Kasich continued to say, no, you do not want to be the Veep on Trump's ticket.
Good.
I'm just saying. I mean, I'm just putting that out there. And if anybody wants to, like, pass that energy on, absolutely, because we do not want him to hand Ohio to Trump.
Yeah, and, you know, it's unclear.
So, I guess the
thing is that Chris Christie is so desperate to become the VP. That's a Sarah Palin.
I'm sorry, I just had some visual images that were not pretty.
You know, the thing is that, you know, you can go all conspiracy, right? And Trump certainly doesn't want to have a VP that's smarter than he is.
Well,
might get attractive.
I think either one of those people would be excellent candidates if that's his reasoning.
The insurance policy, right? What they used to always say about Dan Quayle.
Oh, God.
Which senior's insurance policy? Nobody was going to take him out if that guy was going to become president.
Did you ever think you'd get to a place where you thought Dan Quayle was relatively harmless?
Honestly. I'm having dinner last night with some people and stuff, and we were talking politics, which is no big deal, but their son, teenager, you know, is saying how bad he thinks Hillary Clinton would be as a president and how bad he thinks Donald Trump would be as a president. And, you know, and I just like, I got to be honest, if Hillary Clinton wins, she certainly won't be the worst president I've had in my lifetime.
No shit.
And if Donald Trump wins, I'm afraid he won't be the worst president in my lifetime.
Because of the continued downward spiral.
Spiral.
Yeah.
So there's still just, let's just get it on and get it over with. because the truth of the matter is, I mean, let's talk about things that are important, right? The unemployment rate, which is just staggeringly low now, right? And
well, you know, that's because Donald Trump is in the race. It has nothing to do with Barack Obama.
Exactly. Except it has everything to do with the people who are currently in power.
Right. I know that, and you know that, but the doofuses who are, yeah, like, handing the victory to the GOP.
You know, so the unemployment rate is... Utah is actually at 3.7. So, you know, good for you guys, Utah. California, we're 5.3.
Wow.
Which is lower than the national average.
Mm-hmm.
Silicon Valley, we have unemployment rates lower that haven't been this low since 2001, which is when the dot-com bomb blew up. Yeah. Orange County, LA County, historic low... unemployment rates lower than we've had, you know, in 10 years, 15 years in some cases. I mean, it's really amazing. California's firing on all cylinders. And personally, I just don't want to see this fucked up by...
I was just going to say we have a sure way to fuck that up.
You know, by some of these idiots that, you know, want the job. You know, and I mean, this is where, you know, it all goes down to Trump talking about fucking with the full faith and credit of, you know, the United States, as we discussed on the podcast from last week.
Not last week, week before.
Is that 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yep.
2 weeks ago. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I'm just kind of hammering on this same old drum, right? Which is, things are getting better all over the place. Unemployment. It's the economy. It's all that matters. And the truth of the matter is, the economy is better now than it was 8 years ago when Obama took over. You know, it's carrying up to be as good as it was when Clinton was president.
You are preaching to the choir, brother.
You know, so why anybody would want to make a change to a guy who thinks that, you know, renegotiating the federal deficit, the federal debt, and all the rest of that stuff makes sense, beyond me.
I don't know.
And today we're going to talk about some of the things that caused the last recession.
But I'm going to haul you back into the news first.
Okay.
But I mean, I do think that it's important for us to have this discussion. And this may be the thing that makes Glass-Steagall pertinent for people, because we really are looking at essentially some prosperous economics right now, whether people feel it or not. And there is certainly the potential for us to crash again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's always. And there will always be crashes. The markets and the economy always run up and down.
Absolutely. But we can do things to make that less likely.
Absolutely.
But going back to the news... So the only there were two other things that I really wanted to bring up, and one is a new NBC Wall Street poll, and I know that we both agree that polls are not scientific, so you can't take them as 100% predictive, but this is kind of some scary stuff. So this came out this morning. If you match Sanders against Trump, Sanders is 54%, Trump is 39%, which means he's got a 15-point lead over Trump in a national election. If you match Hillary to Trump, she's 46, he's 43. That means that's in the margin of error. She could potentially lose this election.
Well, certainly that's the story that everybody wants to generate right now so that people will keep paying attention to all this nonsense.
Sure. But
I'm so over this shit.
You're so over it. That's so funny. Well, maybe we can go back to some non-political podcast for a while. Until you get really fired up again, and then we'll do a political podcast.
No, but I mean every poll's been showing that somehow Bernie is more popular than Clinton. But that doesn't make any sense. Yes, Bernie has won some in the last several and stuff, but he's not winning by huge margins and stuff. And when you factor in the voting for the entirety of the primary, you know, she's received quite a number of votes greater than him.
Okay, I'm going to call you on that a little bit, because it really does depend on the state and the process. For example, he had big numbers in Oregon, but what we see over and over again is that he does best, I admit it, in rural states and caucus states. He also does best when it is an open primary, which means that people who are not registered as Democrats can cross over and vote.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, that's not the reality of the system. That's a partial reality at best.
Right.
So, you know, I just think that... And I do think that Bernie genuinely has higher numbers than Hillary does when you look at national polling. I think those are legitimate to a certain degree. And I think it's because of what I've been saying all along, which is that people are missing the appeal of Trump and Sanders, which is that they are outsiders.
Right.
So I can totally see Bernie having those bigger numbers, because he doesn't have 30 years of name recognition and 30 years of history. I mean, he does. You and I know that, but most people haven't paid attention to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're looking at the end game here, right? And the thing is that the chance of Sanders winning California is almost nil at this point.
I know. You don't have to rub my nose in it, man.
I'm not trying to. I'm just saying, you know.
So what I'm hearing, and let me go ahead.
There's a lot I want to say, but I'm kind of biting my tongue on all of it here.
Well,
so.
I mean, have at it. This is one of the few places that we get to say what we want to say. But what I'm hearing is that you are just ready for the end game to play itself out so we can get on with it.
Right, because the truth of the matter is we need to beat Trump, and so we need to be investing all the money and resources at our disposal into that.
You know, and I hate to say that, and there are a lot of people on my Facebook page who I like and would hang out with who would call me a political whore because I'm willing to see the writing on the wall. And I know that winning is more important. Winning against Trump is more important than anything else at this point. Which, yeah. I can't believe I just spoke those words out loud.
It's called being an adult about it.
I do hope, yeah. You know my sigh. It's more about being adult in general. So I do hope, I mean, I genuinely hope that if Bernie does not get the nomination, which looks unlikely, which looks highly unlikely, that this does play into change in our political system, positive change in our political system. But I also recognize that this is the system within which we have to work now.
Right. And so here's, man, I'm just going to be a total downer all day here.
You know what? Go for it.
But there's no change coming in our political system. What'll happen is the people who were Sanders supporters are probably mostly non-aligned, independent, you know, like Bernie himself. And the problem is that we don't have the ability to generate a third party in this country. So if we really do want something to happen, we got to reform the Democratic Party to allow for more progressive stuff. The Democrats have spent decades eliminating the progressive wing of the party.
So I've actually read
just
some
like
stuff.
The Republicans spent, you know, decades getting rid of the liberal wing of the Republican Party.
And I've actually read some stuff that suggests that the progressives need to break up with the Democrats, that the progressives really do need to form a progressive party.
And right, the question is, how do you even successfully do that anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you certainly tap into all of the people who are going to be disillusioned by November. But yep. Do they have enough staying power and do they have enough wherewithal to really make it a functional third party? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I would be willing to participate in that process because I'm very disillusioned, but
yeah,
I don't know. You know?
There's so many things we got to reform. Starting with
our financial system. Come on, I was giving you a segue.
I like it.
And I'm not talking about the thing that lets you move without walking.
That's right. So, okay. I don't know. There are some things, absolutely a few things that I do really want to cover quickly.
I've got the Reader's Digest version of both Dodd-Frank and Glass-Steagall for those of us who are not as in tune with the financial system as you are. So I may be interjecting things to dumb it down a bit for those of us who need to be talked to like we're fifth graders.
Nobody on this podcast needs to be talked to like a fifth grader. We all need to be talked to like an adult.
Well, but here's the thing, really truthfully, is, you know, I've said this to you before. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, but one of the things I love about what we do is that it makes me learn about things that I don't take the time to learn about otherwise.
Right.
So part of the reason that I wanted to do this episode is everybody's batting around the name Glass-Steagall, and I'm like, okay, but what does it really mean? And so I had to take the time to look at it and read about it and understand it a little bit.
So what does Glass-Steagall really mean?
Oh, man, now you're putting me on the spot. But I may as well start with the basics for people who need the basics like me.
Right.
Because you just have other stuff in your brain, and that's not part of it. So it was passed in 1933. It was a bill signed into law by FDR, and actually, this is from a New York Times article, has not been the law of the land for, at the time of the writing of the article, which was last fall, 16 years. It was overturned by Bill Clinton.
Right.
And it's named for Senator Carter Glass of Virginia and Representative Henry Stegall of Alabama. And basically, they felt like the Great Depression was caused by two things. That the two, they separated banking into two broad categories. They said that one was commercial banking, which is basically what you and I do when we go to the bank. You know, we put in a deposit, we write a check, whatever. That's basic commercial banking.
Right.
The other stuff is investment banking.
Correct.
And so they said that by intermingling those two types of banking too closely and making and blurring the lines where banks could do both of those types of banking, that was a big part of the Wall Street crash in 1929. So Glass-Steagall was created to reform that.
Correct.
Thank you. That's my Cliff's Note version of what Glass-Steagall was supposed to do. So basically, it required that banks did one or the other. They did commercial banking or they did investment banking, but they couldn't cross lines and do both in the same institution.
Correct.
So then,
so what happened 16 years ago?
Well, I was going to say, then we enter the 1990s, right? And there's a lot of heartache about limitations on banks. And supposedly, and it's probably true, our banks were at a competitive disadvantage internationally because international banks could do both types of banking in one institution, and we had limitations from Glass-Steagall. So Bill Clinton signed a law that overturned it in 1999. Yep. It was called the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act.
Yep.
And it basically allowed the rise of the big banks that were, to a certain degree, involved in the crash of 2008.
Not to a certain degree.
Well, but it, so there's an interesting point in the article that I read about differentiating between how Glass-Steagall contributed and how the overturn of Glass-Steagall contributed and how it did not.
Okay. And to the New York Times point?
I was going to say, do you want to throw anything in at this point, or are you going to keep me talking?
I'm going to keep you talking. It's fine.
Okay. So, basically, we did see banks that were doing commercial and investment lines together, like Citigroup, JP Morgan, Bank of America, and they were, quote, too big to fail. And then what happened is those three banks alone, with their combined assets, were 36% of the U.S. GDP. So they owned a huge portion of our economic system, just these three banks together. But the thing that the article on the Times pointed out is that not all banks that got fished out, that got bailed out, were part of the too big to fail network, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So there were other banks involved that were not doing a combination of commercial and investment banking. There were banks like Washington Mutual and Countrywide, excuse me, that were doing risky stuff like subprime mortgages that had nothing to do with the interconnection or the intertwining of commercial and investment banking. And they were a big part of the too big to fail and the crash in 2008 as well.
Okay, I mean,
Does that make any sense?
I understand the point they're making. I'll tell you why I disagree in a minute.
Okay, shoot, go for it. Because you've let me talk an awful lot, and I probably sound like, well, the reader's
digest version. If it wasn't, because if the commercial and investment banks hadn't been merging, hadn't been doing, been able to do what they were doing because of the repeal of Glass-Steagall, there wouldn't have been nearly the market for the subprime loans being churned out by Countrywide and Washington Mutual.
Okay, that's interesting. So explain that a little bit more to me.
Because you got to sell this stuff. Countrywide didn't hold their loans.
Right, they sold them to other banks, right?
Right, they're selling them off, right? And ultimately what they're doing is selling them off. And then all of these loans are getting bundled up and put into pools, and the pools are getting sliced up into what they call tranches and sold off. So you're getting a piece of a pool of some shitty loans, which Moody's has said, oh yeah, this is AAA stuff. Don't worry about it, fuckers. last episode, I hate Moody's.
I still need to read The Big Short, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, the Big Short all the way. But so, you know, and who's buying this stuff, right? And then selling it, who's using their commercial side to buy this crap?
And so that, and I'm putting this into words and you have to say yes or no, but that is how all of the little people got screwed.
Because
we were doing the bulk of our business with commercial banks or the commercial banking aspect of a large bank. And because they were spending their money on risky subprime mortgages or hedge funds, we got sucked into that. Our money got sucked into
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and yes, to the New York Times point, my understanding is that, yes, Washington Mutual and Countrywide were not, you know, directly involved in this combination of commercial and investment banking.
Right. They were purely engaged in investment banking. But your point, your greater point, makes sense.
Yeah. Is that, so, I mean, ultimately, man, this is wild. Ultimately, there was a problem in the 2000s. And that is that coming out of the end of the 90s and stuff, the markets were somewhat stable. There wasn't a good place to get a good return on investment until everybody started looking at real estate.
And this goes back to what we talked about a few episodes ago, which is that the greater the risk, the greater the return.
Right.
Which I still don't quite understand, but...
why not?
I think I just don't have a financial mind, if that makes any sense. I don't understand why you would take your money and put it into something extremely risky and potentially lose it as compared to putting into something relatively safe and have a much better potential outcome.
Yeah, okay. I mean, which I totally get. The question is how fast do you need your money to grow?
Right. And and this goes to retiring, right? So the people who are screwed and haven't saved and all of a sudden need a big turnaround, they're going to take the risk.
Sure, people, right? But institutions, you know, they're kind of different. I mean, start with institutions, you're not even playing with your own money. And this was the problem. This goes right to the heart of Glass-Steagall. And the problem with the investment banks who were basically buying these collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps. That was the other piece of it. But anyway, the tranche, going back to, you know, now we got these subprime mortgages. They're put into pools. We cut the pools up into tranches. The tranches get rated AAA by Moody's, the fuckers, and then sold off as great investments, right? And the investment banks are buying this stuff, but they're using your money in the terms and forms of the deposits that you, the public, have made in those banks to buy this shit for themselves, to enrich themselves, because the payoff is going to be for themselves.
I was going to say, and to which most of us did not agree deposited into the commercial bank.
Right, but you don't worry about it because the feds have said that if you got up to $100,000,
you're okay.
Safe. You're okay, which is good because otherwise there would be no banking at all. Because of this kind of shit, right?
Right.
Nobody would put their money in a bank. I might buy T-bills with it, and I'd stuff all the T-bills in my fucking mattress.
Right. And then you told me that the returns on a T-bill were really, really sucky. I can't remember exactly what you said.
2%, but the reason is because there's no risk in it, right? So, but this time they, because, you know, and so the stuff that's, so here's the thing. Stuff that's rated AAA by Moody's, right, is supposed to have no risk in it. And yet the return on this stuff was higher than something that had no risk associated with it.
So I have a question for you. Was that intentional on Moody's part? It sounds intentional on the bank's part.
Well, here's
to kind of chop it up and hide it and then go, oh, this is a great risk. There's no problem here. You're fine. This is a sure thing. Was that hiding pieces in plain sight or...
So... Okay, there's some models that definitely showed, you know, that the ratings made sense. There's some models that show that it doesn't. But the problem with the ratings agencies is who pays the rating agencies?
I'm assuming the banks.
Yeah, well, whoever's bringing an investment to them to be rated is paying for the rating.
So, of course, you want them to say good things about your investment, whether it's a safe investment or not.
Absolutely. And on the other hand, if you're Moody's, the way you continue to get business is to have a reputation of being able to say that things have a AAA standard. The fuckers.
I'm still not sure this deep in how you feel about Moody's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me clarify. The fuckers. But yeah, so the problem is the incentive is to rate this stuff well. And, you know, you got some models that'll show that it should be okay. You know, and just ignore the models that show that it won't be okay.
Yeah, that just doesn't sound good to me. That actually makes me have a hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach.
Absolutely, right? You know, because if we did this, this is why it goes right to the heart of the FDA and stuff, right? Like, because if we did this with drug trials, it would be a real problem.
Right. It might work. Ignore the stuff that says it doesn't work.
Ignore the stuff that results in anal leakage. Anyway, so we've got, just go back to this one more time. We've got banks buying subprime or doing subprime loans. And the incentive for them, right, is that they're taking points, right? They're getting paid for originating the loan. And one point is a percentage point of the loan. So, you know, it's usually 2 or 3 points to originate the loan. So that's a lot of money that the banks are pulling in. They're quickly bundling these things up and they're selling them off as quick as possible to other people who are taking their loans and other loans and bundling them into other things and, like I said, slicing them up and then selling these things called collateralized debt obligations, CDOs.
So it really sounds like a huge shell game, which I'm sure you're going to say yes, it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because yeah. It gets better. It gets better. Now, you know that you can take out insurance against bad things happening.
Right.
So, what you can do is take out insurance on these instruments that if it goes the other way, if it craps out, you're going to get paid because you have insurance.
But only the big banks and the big investors did that, right?
Some did, some didn't.
Because the rest of us didn't even know what the hell was going on. Right, we were really paying attention.
First of all, 95% of Americans were not involved in any of this in any way more tightly associated than your retirement funds were invested in a fund that was an investor in this stuff.
Excuse
right?
me.
Right. 95% of Americans had nothing to do with this. You know, because...
Because we're all just surviving from day to day.
Right, because the truth is most people don't have money to invest. And what money they do have invested generally is in the form of T-bills, IRAs, you know, just funds. What do they call those funds?
Sorry. Mutual funds?
Mutual funds, right? That's what we have, right?
Yeah.
But what's in your mutual fund? Blah, 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 right? So anyway, that's how you get... Anyway. So... Now I'm taking out insurance, right? But what I'm betting is not that I'm not betting that Todd's house is going to burn down, right? I'm betting on that, you know, many of my neighbors' houses are going to burn down. Even though I have no interest whatsoever in my neighbor's house, no financial interest, I've just decided to take a bet that says, yeah, I think that's going to happen, right?
Okay.
So... Now, because these collateralized debt obligations are AAA rated by Moody's, everybody thinks that anybody who's betting the other way is a moron. And so they think that they're just suckering you into buying this insurance, and so they're going to write this all day. Right? They'll sell this to you all day, because, hey, that's great. And then what happens? It all went to shit, and now there's no money to pay the insurance plans. Right, and that was ING? Who was it?
AIG.
That was AIG.
So the people who were insured got screwed too.
Yeah, a lot of them. Not everybody got paid off as much as they should have and stuff, but in the end, they got most of what they were owed because of bailouts from the federal government.
Yep.
Across, you know, and to be clear, not just in the United States, right? There were bank bailouts across the world. And bank bailouts mean, you know, the government paid for it, and the government paying for it means we the people paid.
I was going to say, so we actually paid twice. We paid for the subprime mortgages, and we paid to bail out the banks.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And we paid for the insurance.
That didn't work.
For the people who were smart enough to know that this was a shell game going the other way.
Ah, awesome.
You know. That's a nutshell over what happened on the housing side of it.
But it kind of makes it make more sense to someone who hasn't been reading extensively about it, i.e. me.
Right, and so the problem is, so what happened? When all of a sudden when the pool started to come up short for paying people for, you know, whatever, right, in all of this, it turns out that these assets are the CDOs, you know, become toxic assets and everything. I mean, first of all, right away, the desire for subprime mortgage is gone. So there's an entire arm of the
financial industry.
Yeah, just gone overnight, right? Because it wasn't just Countrywide and WaMu. There were like tons and tons of small banks across the country. And it was really interesting to look at how many banks were being seized by the FDIC in the 5 years after the meltdown started. Every week they were seizing 2, 3, 4 banks.
Wow.
Which just wasn't getting a whole lot of traction. But I mean, the thing is it was huge. Small banks were going out, right? And I mean, that meant that, you know, they're going to pay off the federal government. We're going to pay off the insurance, the FDIC insurance on those small banks to the depositors, right? Banks are gone. People are out of work. The ripple effect, right? You know, people who, loan originators, gone, out of business, ripple effect.
Yeah, and so is that why it became so much harder for people to get loans?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you lost so many loan originators?
No. It's because the banks were no longer had any ability to loan money.
Aha.
They had no money to loan. It was
and
all
they blame
tied
it
up.
On us because they make us look like we're bad risks.
We were bad. The problem with the subprime stuff is we were bad risks. The problem was that nobody in the banks gave a fuck.
But I'm
until
talking
they
about,
lost money.
I'm talking about post-crash loans, though. Because, you know, there was a big tightening of how stuff was loaned
because they didn't actually have any money to loan.
Right. And what I'm saying is they put that off on the public as well.
Oh, yeah, right.
They said, oh, no. You're way too risky to loan stuff, too.
Although last week you gave me a ninja loan, no problem. Which, by the way, said a ninja loan is no income, no job.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, hey, are you working? Sure. How much do you make? $2 billion a week. Perfect.
We don't need any proof of that. Here's your loan.
It's exactly how the subprime was working.
Wow.
Right, and here we are. We are 10 years later. 10 years later.
And we're still seeing the ramifications.
Yeah, and it's just now starting to all pick up and put itself back together. But it leads back to Glass-Steagall, and the problem is, right, as when you start talking about Dodd-Frank.
Yeah, we should transition into Dodd-Frank.
The hole that was created by Glass-Steagall being repealed in no way has been filled by Dodd-Frank, right?
Okay, so let me give the Reader's Digest version again. So this is what I learned about Dodd-Frank. So it was passed in 2010, and basically it included a particular rule to reduce risky activity in mega banks, and that was the Volcker Rule, right? It was named after Paul Volcker, the former Fed chairman, And here's what it says, and this is a quote directly from the article that I read. It prevents systematically important banks, end quote, from casino-like activities such as risky trades or speculative bets. So it basically is supposed to keep those banks from doing risky things with our money, but it doesn't.
Because the problem is how do you define what is a risky thing?
Right.
And by the way, is it a risky thing when the market is going up and Moody's has rated this shit AAA to be buying this shit? Is that a risky proposition?
Well, and I think the even bigger thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is how do we define systematically important banks? I mean, is there a particular size? Is there a particular income level?
Yeah, which is interesting because the thing with Dodd-Frank, right, was that none of this stuff is actually defined in the legislation. All that's defined is the fact that this stuff needs to be defined, right?
Well, and this goes back to pandering, right? So we're going to make you feel a little better by passing Dodd-Frank, which doesn't really do anything.
Right.
And I would add that Hillary Clinton, God bless her soul, has proposed tightening Dodd-Frank. I think Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders were smart to take it one further, which is returning to Glass-Steagall. But anyway, right. She says that she wants to eliminate a provision that allows banks to invest in risky hedge funds. So that's her idea of tightening.
Oh my God, I'm so tired of this hedge fund nonsense. we have turned hedge funds into the, you know, into the communist
into the devil. The devil, yeah.
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 Hedge funds, it's just a pool of money, right, that's being invested one way or another. People don't like hedge funds because they seem secretive and cabalistic and, you know, all that shit. But it's just another form of investment. There's nothing wrong with them.
Well, and, you know, the thing that I read about hedge funds, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that they are high dollar, high risk. And that's the thing that people don't like about them.
Right, but nobody's asking you to invest in them, you know.
So, but how do we prevent investing in them in a way that we did before the crash of 2008?
We didn't prevent that before.
Well, but my understanding, and again, this is a very limited understanding, is that, you know, if our money gets put in whatever risky venture by the bank that's doing both commercial banking and investment banking, are we really sure that our money didn't get put into hedge funds?
Oh, well. Yeah, okay. So
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or does at least the question make sense?
The question does make sense, absolutely. Yeah, hedge fund, right? A limited partnership of investors that uses high-risk methods such as investing with borrowed money in hopes of realizing large capital gains. It's that piece right there. Investing with borrowed money is the problem. And I don't know that anything in Dodd-Frank raises or lowers, however you want to look at it. This is the thing. Banks were highly leveraged at that point, mm-hmm. too, right? And hedge funds and all that. That's all high leverage stuff. And the amount of money that they had to keep in reserve to pay in case it did go bad was way too low. They were allowed to borrow way too much beyond their ability to repay at any moment. Which, by the way, is, you know, how the world works,
right?
I was
going to say, it's kind of the American way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, the other thing that I read about Glass-Steagall versus Dodd-Frank, which I think is appropriate to the election cycle, even though Martin O'Malley is now out of the race, is that it became a topic of conversation, at least on the Dems side, because it became a way for Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders to completely delineate their stance from Hillary Clinton's.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it also became kind of a cudgel, quite frankly, because they were able to say, and your husband is the one who overturned Glass-Steagall.
It's true, absolutely. And it's also true that any reform that Hillary Clinton is talking about doing with the banks is minor,
right?
Because she's a Wall Street Democrat,
right?
I mean, there's no doubt about it. The thing that differentiates her from Trump is that Trump doesn't give a fuck.
See, it all goes back to the election. As much as you don't want to do, it all goes back to the election right now.
Right, because, you know, Hillary's talking about maybe shaking up the Fed and, you know, doing some things different. And I'm not sure that I agree with what she's doing, talking about yet. But there are some reforms that will come out of, potentially will come out of a Clinton administration. The reforms that will come out of a Trump administration would be to
zero.
Well, actually would be to continue to reduce any restrictions that we have in place currently.
Right.
For our safety. Right. You know, because fuck you, I just built the wall 10 feet higher because you mentioned Glass-Steagall.
No, I mean, I think that's accurate. And I think the other thing is, as much as I am not crazy about Hillary's background and her supporters, she at least has an understanding of what all of this means. I understand it better than Trump does.
Right.
That's pretty scary.
No, well, yeah, but... Yes, absolutely.
I'm just saying, you know, if somebody's going to be the president of the United States, they should have a better understanding of all of this stuff than I now
have. That's what I got to tell you. That's what I'm so sick of, right? Is this anti-election intellectualism. Oh, I want the president to be somebody I can have a beer with. Are you fucking kidding? I want the guy to be somebody who is so far above me in brains that I can't even keep up with him.
I agree.
Because somebody I can have a beer with isn't going to help me solve financial crisis, the Middle East, or global fucking warming.
Now, one of the
because I have beers with people all the time, and so far we have failed to do any of those things.
But one of the things that I will say is, I think someone can be way ahead of me intellectually in policy, in financial matters, but I do want that person's activity to be tempered with some compassion.
Yeah, I'm okay.
You know, and I mean, this brings to mind something that I was going to say in our news update, is that I posted some pictures of Bernie to my Facebook page today that show him at the Friendship Place, which is a place along our existing wall with Mexico, where families who are separated because half of the family is in the U.S. and the other half of the family is in Mexico can actually meet and spend some time together. And the pictures of him were... visually, like the picture of someone touching the Wailing Wall. And I thought, how come people can't see that compassion and that wisdom? How come people are so scared of someone who brings that kind of depth of feeling to this office?
Because we're not compassionate.
Well, I mean, I think that's true, you know, and especially as someone who has started working gangbusters on it with a teacher... I absolutely think that's true, but it just breaks my heart to see just this ugly, ugly race populated by people who just don't care about other people. And I think the difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is that he's like, fuck it, I don't care about you. And she's like, well, I'll fake it till I make it.
Well, I mean, in maybe she does care more. I don't know. What I'm concerned about mostly in this, as it shapes up in the end game, is who has the intellectual might to be the leader of the most powerful country in the world.
Well, and obviously,
and that's not Donald.
Yes, I was going to say, given the choice between Donald and Hillary, I would absolutely say that Hillary Clinton has that intellectual wherewithal.
Cthulhu 2016.
I know. I never thought it would come back to this, but it's true. I'm voting Cthulhu.
Spelled C-L-I-N-T. Oh, man. Cthulhu.
That is hilarious.
Because at a certain point, I got to say, I don't care about compassion. I don't care about anything, right? I care. At this point, I'm down to caring about who is going to do the least amount of damage to me.
You know, and I have to say, I am sad to be reduced to that place, but I am so worried about this election that, yeah, I can talk all I want about passion or compassion and Bernie's imagery of compassion, but the truth is, I don't want to die.
You know, I mean, the truth is, right, I haven't voted for a president based on anything greater than who's going to do the least amount of damage. since I voted for Bill Clinton over George Bush.
And I think the sad thing is that we were all really hoping this would be different. Yeah. And it's not.
Well, I tell you, Hillary has failed to make a convincing argument as to why she should become the president.
I agree.
That's a problem.
I agree. And I think that might be why we're looking at a Trump presidency, which just scares the shit out of me to say.
Well, we got 24 Republican seats in the Senate up, so let's go get some of those.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's go get some of those.
So is there anything else we need to say about Glass-Steagall or Dodd-Frank?
Quit fucking with the full faith and credit of the United States. I mean, it's a broken record, but it's really... If you are signing a law or proposing a law in the federal government and then sending it to the president, and you're the president and you're considering it, ask yourself this question: am I risking the full faith and credit of the United States by signing this? If the answer is, maybe, don't fucking sign it.
This message brought to you by John Oliver.
By the United States, by the population of the United States, who would really like to go another 20 years without a fucking recession.
No
but...
kidding. Well, I will tell you that I was actually worried about talking about Dodd-Frank and Glass-Steagall being engaging, but I felt like it was really engaging.
Oh, good.
Hopefully no one out there in podcast land is snoring. I mean, I feel like I learned something, and I feel like, again, you know, choosing to be forced to look at this, even if it was just an article in the New York Times, it makes me feel like I know a little bit more, like I understand a little better.
I wish people could put the energy into this that they put into following sports.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking people for following sports. We all have things we like. God knows I've read way too much Game of Thrones in the last... Oh, and I have a public service announcement for HBO. You suck.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Not being up on Game of Thrones and knowing that Nick is not. No spoilers, but it sounds like you have some pretty passionate reasons to say that.
Well, the writers... So there's been a parting of the way between the writers and Martin. And just
oh, dear.
Clear, more and more clear every episode.
So they're straying pretty far from the original source material?
They're straying very far from the original, well-written story. That's the problem, is that we went from no tropes to all tropes all the time.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And I mean, it's no surprise in Game of Thrones that people get killed. But since this season started 4 weeks ago, they have murdered an inordinately high number of people because they believe that that's the shock value of Game of Thrones. And it's like, no, people getting killed isn't the shock value. People getting killed when you truly have no reason to believe that they're about to get murdered, that was what was shocking.
Yeah.
and if one more person says I'm a snob because I've read the books and, you know,
Well, I will just tell you, Game of Thrones is cutting into Fear the Walking Dead ratings, so it will be very good. We're having our mid-season finale tonight. It'll be good for Fear the Walking Dead to have a break and let Game of Thrones get it out of their system.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, something's wrong with HBO because the head of HBO just resigned, so.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I'm interested in that Lyndon B. Johnson movie that Bryan Cranston starred in.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
I'm going to probably watch it over the next week or so, although yep. I still have several other things piled onto my must-watch. So, days aren't long enough.
Exactly. All right, so, moving from pop culture to abortion.
Yeah, so I've got to tell you, my Fuck That Guy and my Hall of Honorable Mention are completely intertwined this week. So first, the Fuck That Guy. You know, I ranted, we talked about it a little bit. On May 19th, the Oklahoma legislature passed a bill that would make performing abortions punishable by up to 3 years in prison. It made performing abortions a felony.
Right. The actual performance of it, not
the person receiving it, right?
Right.
Much to Donald Trump's chagrin. But the interesting thing is that it also blocked physicians from obtaining or renewing a license in Oklahoma if they had done any kind of work around abortion. So right. If somebody was moving from another state and their practice had included giving abortions, they could not get a medical license in Oklahoma.
Because Oklahoma is looking to just drain its brain capital as much as possible.
Right. So that's my fuck that guy. I mean, right, go ahead.
You're going to finish off the Oklahoma story, though?
Yeah, I'm going to finish off the Oklahoma story. That's the Hall of Honorable Mention, which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
So that my fuck that guy is the legislature, and that they actually passed that bill and passed it on to the governor to be signed into law. I mean, it wasn't just like the House passed it, or it wasn't just like the state Senate passed it. Their entire body passed it and passed it on to be signed into law. So here's where the Hall of Honorable Mention comes in, and I'm sort of reluctant to put this person in there, but Governor Mary Fallon vetoed the law the next day. She did not sign it. And she did it for two reasons. So first she said that the language was ambiguous, and basically because of ambiguous language, it meant that doctors performing abortions would not be sure what constitutes procedures that they could do in the event of using the life of the mother exception. There was an exception to the law that they could do an abortion to save the mother.
Right.
But Mary Fallon said that was too ambiguous. Here's the other thing that's scary, though, and this is why I reluctantly put her in the Hall of Honorable Mention. So she actually says that this legislation won't present a valid challenge to Roe versus Wade, and she would like to see Roe versus Wade overturned by appointing a conservative pro-life justice to the Supreme Court.
Yep. So she's on the short list for Donald Trump for VP.
Oh my God, I totally missed that. Now I'm going to vomit. Yeah, so, I mean, definitely intertwined, definitely glad she vetoed it, kind of concerned she's looking for them to do it right, and I put that in quotes, so she can actually sign it into law.
Yep.
For the record, there are also some pro-life groups that said that this is totally unconstitutional because Roe versus Wade is the law of the land.
Right.
So...
No, the idea is to come up with something so offensive and egregious that you can get it onto the Supreme Court docket.
I think you're right. And I think...
That's been the goal for years.
The other thing is now that we've got a 4-4 court, it becomes more problematic if they manage to get it on the docket.
Right, but it won't be a 4-4 court for much longer.
From your lips to God's ears.
By much longer, I mean, you know, sometime next year for the next session.
Yeah, I mean, one way or another...
We're not going to get one this year.
We're not going to see a 4-4 court after the election. Please, God, don't let it be Donald Trump who is appointing the fifth, or the rather ninth justice.
Right.
Ugh. So what do you have? Do you have anything for fuck that guy?
Actually, it's the same story, but I want to say fuck the media for this.
Okay.
Because every one of them reported it as Oklahoma has just passed a law making it a felony, right?
I agree. I totally thought that's it was a done deal.
Yeah, that's not what they did. And so either you're playing loose with the facts in order to generate sensational headlines.
Which is exactly what they were doing.
Right. Or you're morons. So, you know, you can let me know whichever position you want to take. But, yeah, this is an important issue, and I'm no way want to diminish it, but I just am getting sick of this. So-and-so did such-and-such. No, they didn't. You know, it hasn't happened yet.
Right, this is what they did, and here are the potential
ramifications. You have not passed a law until it is signed into law.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, while we're on the media, okay, it's horrible, horrible, horrible that 66 people died on that Egypt Air flight. I am so fucking sick of 24/7 Egypt Air.
Right.
I don't even know what to say.
And Donald Trump, right? Coming right out. And that plane was shot down. I know it happened. Well, I know.
And Hillary Clinton not so much denying it. Kind of going, right, well, but, yeah, there's a good possibility.
Of course, right? But again, you know, fuckers, quit trying to play the terrorism card.
Right.
Because nobody's taking credit for it.
Nobody. So I have some thoughts about that, since we're kind of really straying off target. That was
No tinfoil.
Yeah. No, I'm not going there. I'm not going down the tinfoil path. But I wonder if there really is a body that could take responsibility for it, like ISIL, like Al-Qaeda, and they're just enjoying the fact that we're totally flabbergasted and can't figure out who took responsibility for it.
I mean, if they were doing that, that would be a complete reversal of the way that they have historically operated.
Right, but wouldn't that just be a total mindfuck to be like, yep, we blew it up and we're not telling you anything, so have fun twisting yourself in knots, second-guessing.
It wouldn't actually generate the response that they need to generate. They would take credit for it because they want to show that they're powerful.
Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah. So, the thing is that planes come out of the sky, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely is it because somebody blew one up.
Yeah, I don't know that we know. I don't know that we're going to find out, but we can't leap to conclusions, especially in an election year.
Right. Yeah. If it does turn out that it is a terrorism incident, then okay, it is, right? But here's the thing. Here's the other thing, though. Does it matter? Plane fell out of the sky. It's unfortunate. What is the direct impact this has on Americans? Absolutely nothing.
And it doesn't, but it does matter in that it has the potential to bolster Trump's arguments with his base.
Right, but that's what I would say to Americans, though, is, you know, before you go getting yourself wrapped around the axle again on this.
Yeah.
What difference does it make?
Yeah.
None. You know? We're going to be talking about the Second Amendment here shortly, but I, you know, in an upcoming episode. But I just, again, like I was saying earlier, California, you know, is doing some interesting stuff with gun control laws, and it's all because of the San Bernardino shooting, which is a complete overreaction. And none of what they're doing would have made the slightest difference at all.
Would have stopped it.
Stopped it? No, of course not.
I'm interested, very interested in having that conversation then.
Yeah, you know, so
I do think we're going to talk about opiates the next time we talk.
Sure. I want to talk about hillbilly heroin.
Actually, heroin is cheaper than hillbilly heroin now, so that'll be an interesting conversation to have.
Yes, I mean, there's a whole economic thing here too, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so next time, tune in for drugs and how to get them. No, that's not it. Drugs and why it's a problem. That's maybe more what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think so too. So, I do have some Neil Gaiman to take us out with, of course. And this is kind of a long one. It's from American Gods, and I just really liked it. And I think that I liked it because it talks about the stuff that we've been talking about for months, but it also just kind of talks about living a human life. So, here we go. I can believe things that are true and things that aren't true, and I can believe things where nobody knows if they're true or not. I believe that the future sucks, and I believe that the future rocks, and I believe one day White Buffalo Woman is going to come back and kick everyone's ass. I believe that all men are just overgrown boys with deep problems communicating, and that the decline in good sex in America is coincident with the decline in drive-in movie theaters from state to state. I believe that all politicians are unprincipled crooks, and I still believe that they are better than the alternative. I believe that California is going to sink into the sea when the big one comes, while Florida is going to dissolve into madness and alligators and toxic waste. I believe that anyone who says sex is overrated just hasn't done it properly. I believe that anyone who claims to know what's going on will lie about the little things, too. I believe in absolute honesty and sensible social lies. I believe in a woman's right to choose, a baby's right to live, that while all human life is sacred, there's nothing wrong with the death penalty if you trust the legal system implicitly, and no one but a moron would ever trust the legal system. I believe that life is a game, that life is a cruel joke, and that life is what happens when you're alive, and you might as well lie back and enjoy it.
All right.
Kind of sums everything up, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so we're going to turn it off for today, but we will see you guys in about a week.
Yay!
And have a great week.